From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Mike O'Dare, Johnny. Any sign of Kathy?
No, the boys at the highway turnoff haven't seen her or Benny, either one. Not a soul out that way in the last hour.
What about there at the sawmill?
Nothing, Mike. No fresh tracks on the logging road, no sign of her. And the worst thing is, it's starting to snow again.
Yeah, here in town, too. Dan Martin just phoned. No luck. She hasn't shown up at any of the roadblocks. She's around somewhere, and we've got to find her.
We will, Mike.
And it's got to be fast, Johnny. There's a blizzard coming up, and that gunman Benny Stark is around, too. Maybe he's already found her. Maybe he even took her from the house, her and Jill both. Maybe she didn't get scared and run. Maybe it was him. Maybe he's...
Mike, stop it. That kind of thing is not going to help any.
But what is going to help?
I don't know, but I've got a half-baked idea, and I may be right. Stay there at the house. I'm coming back to pick you up. And one thing you can do while you're waiting.
What, Johnny?
Pray.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Branbury, Michigan, to the home office, Tri-Mutual Insurance Limited, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Nick Schirn matter. Or more important, find Kathy O'Dare. Item 12 on expense account, $4.90, a tank full of gas for the county pickup I'd borrowed from Deputy Sheriff Dan Martin. The falling snow was thickening now, and the wind was rising and steadying in the northwest. The night had all the makings of a blizzard. And wherever Kathy and her daughter had gone, we had to find them before it hit. It was 10:14 p.m. when I pulled up at the side porch of the O'Dare house, and Kathy's father came hurrying out to the truck, leaving the door open behind him and buttoning his heavy Mackinaw as he ran. Any news, Mike?
Not a thing.
All right, get in. Shut the door.
Yeah, we'll get a foot of snow before morning, with a zero wind behind it.
Now listen, Mike. I think we can forget any idea that Benny found her and got her out of the house. In that case, she wouldn't have taken your car. He's already got one.
I know. I thought of that.
And he wouldn't have given her time to dress herself in jail the way she did, with heavy clothes and snow boots. And she wouldn't have taken the rifle.
Then what has happened?
She knew I'd be there to talk to her sometime this evening. I think she lost her nerve, couldn't face it, decided to run again.
Maybe so, but where, Johnny?
That's what I want you to tell me.
What?
No, I don't mean you knew what she was going to do and where she was going to go or...
Then how do you think I can tell you?
Look... Kathy knew about the roadblocks Dan Martin set up to trap Benny Stark, knew where they were. So if she didn't want to be seen, then naturally she'd avoid them.
She couldn't, not if she wanted to get away, take the highway to Flint or Detroit. She'd have to pass one of them at least.
But she hasn't passed any of them, so she's still in this area. And I don't think she ever meant to leave it.
But then...
Dan Martin said Kathy used to spend a lot of time in the woods when she was growing up. He said she knew every back trail in these hills, logging camps, trappers' cabins.
She did. She used to worry the dickens out of me the way she...
Yeah. Now, where would she go, Mike, if she wanted to hide out back in the hills somewhere?
There's a lot of places. Chippewa Canyon's one. 3 or 4 timber camps abandoned in the winter. Some cabins along the... No, she couldn't make it. There's a roadblock before you get to the turnoff there.
It's got to be some place she can reach without being seen.
Well, there's Barker's Flats. Oh, but that's 12 miles of a foot trail. She wouldn't try it in this weather, not with Jill along, anyway. Then there's... Lake Pine? No, it's over the other way. Pine Lake Road.
Where's that?
Runs northwest of town. Not much better than a wagon road. Dan didn't put a block on it because it dead ends at the lake about 5 miles out.
What's out there?
Nothing at the lake. But you can go on up Pine Creek about 4 miles on foot, and there's some cabins. Maybe a waste of time, Johnny.
Let's get going. Expense account, item 13, $6.90. One dry cell electric lantern, an extra pair of batteries picked up at the Branbury Hardware Company on the way through town. The falling snow, driven by a bitter cold wind, formed a dense curtain in front of our headlights. And from the turnoff all the way up the narrow twisting road to Pine Lake, I had to keep the truck in second gear. There were car tracks in the road, all right, several of them. But they were covered now by the new blanket of snow. And it was impossible to tell whether they'd been made earlier tonight or a week ago.
The road ends a couple of yards past this next turn.
And we'll soon know.
There's 4 or 5 side turnips. Clearance where you can park. We'll have to check all of them, I guess.
All right.
That draw there on the right. That break there in the trees. That's where the Pine Creek trail starts.
Well, we'll swing in. Mike, I guess we won't have to check those turnips.
Huh?
Is that your car over there under the trees?
Yeah. That's it.
I left Mike waiting in the cab while I went over to look inside the car. It was empty, abandoned. And there was no note, no clue of any kind to tell where Kathy had gone. I raised the hood and felt the motor block, ice cold. The car had been here for some time. I flashed the lantern on the ground and followed the faint tracks made by two pairs of snow boots. The end of the deep draw that led back into the hills, the start of the Pine Creek Trail. I snapped off the lantern and stumbled through the snow back to the truck.
What'd you find, Johnny?
It's them, all right. They've headed up the trail. I found tracks in the snow.
Well, then we'd better get started.
No, wait. I'll go after them, Mike. You take the truck. Go into town, find Dan Martin. Bring help as fast as you can. That storm's getting worse.
No, you don't. I know the risk, starting up that trail with a blizzard coming on. And if you think you're going to protect me by sending...
Knock it off, Mike. There's no time, and you're wrong. I'm not protecting you. I'm protecting myself.
What do you mean?
That bum leg of yours. I don't want you on my hands, too, along with the girls.
All right, Johnny. I'll go after Dan.
And hurry, Mike. I'm depending on you.
Yeah. Good luck, Johnny.
See you, Mike. I stood there in the snow watching the headlights of the truck move away. Finally, they swung around the bend and disappeared. And I suddenly felt more alone than I ever had in my life. I'd gotten rid of Mike deliberately, sent him away on purpose, because I hadn't told him everything. I could see no point in tearing his heart out. There was another car parked on beyond Kathy's, nearly hidden by the trees. Jed Wharton's station wagon. The car that had been stolen by a killer named Benny Stark. It took me half an hour to cover the first mile, and the storm kept getting worse. The beam of the lantern penetrated a bare 30 feet ahead of me before it was smothered out in the white blackness of the night. After a few hundred yards, the tracks I was trying to follow had nearly disappeared, snowballed over and blotted out. I gave up looking for them and stuck to old Mike's description of the trail, following the left bank of the frozen creek. The drifts were deeper down along the creek bottoms, and the going was rougher. But I didn't dare leave it to look for better footing. My only landmark, the trail itself, was buried. Any man who lost his way tonight and wandered off into one of those side gullies would wander straight to his death. An hour passed. Then an hour and a half, or 2 hours maybe. I lost all track of time and distance. The wind cut through my clothes and a numbing cold crept into me deeper and deeper. Gradually, the walking, stumbling, breathing, even thinking became automatic and without feeling. The world itself seemed to narrow down to a tiny circle close around me. And all beyond was chaos, blackness, and roaring storm. I tripped over fallen logs and floundered back to my feet, dropped my lantern and recovered it, broke through the crusted drifts and struggled for footing, and kept on moving. In the weird nightmare of the blizzard, I could hardly recognize reality when I came face to face with it. When a beam from my lantern touched him, crouching by a tree a few yards away, I could barely accept him as being real. He'd been watching my light as I approached, waiting for me. It was Benny Stark with his gun leveled and aimed. Don't be a fool, Benny! Drop that gun! A curtain of snow swept between us then, blotting out the sight of him, and I was grateful. I turned and stumbled on into the storm, moving in pitch darkness now, except for the ghostly glow from the snow-covered ground. The second shot had smashed my lantern. I had nothing left to go by but instinct and luck, and they weren't enough. Within 15 minutes, I was hopelessly lost. That's when I started hearing the music. Miles from no place where there couldn't be any music. Except inside my head. The cold and fatigue were finally doing their work. I knew the signs. The next step was to start wandering in circles, smaller and smaller ones. And the last step, to drop exhausted and go peacefully to sleep. Peacefully and permanently. But The sound kept growing louder, and I moved in the direction it seemed to be coming from. It couldn't be just illusions. It had to be real. Hello! Hello there! Then suddenly, only a few yards away, a brilliant blaze of light exploded from the darkness, and it seemed that a golden-haired girl was standing in the middle of it. And for a moment, my sanity tottered.
Who's out there?
My golden vision was wearing blue jeans and a flannel shirt and was holding a rifle. She looked exactly like the photograph I'd seen of Kathy O'Dare. And the blaze of light came from an open cabin door.
Who is it? Speak up or I'll shoot.
Oh, thank heaven. Hold him, Miss Dare. It's Johnny Dollar.
Are you getting warm now?
I don't think I'll ever get warm again.
You will if you don't move away from the stove a little. The back of your shirt is starting to smoke.
Yeah, I thought I was beginning to feel something. How's the firewood?
There's plenty. And plenty of food.
And a radio. If I hadn't heard that music, I'd have blundered right on past this cabin.
We've got everything. We can hold out for a month if we have to. And I hope we have to.
What about your daughter? Is she all right?
Sure. She's fine. A picnic for her. A camping trip. She's sound asleep back there in the lean-to. Dreaming about Santa Claus, I suppose. I wish I could. How did you find me, Mr. Dollar?
A hunch. Guesswork. I was born under a lucky star.
I wasn't.
Oh, I don't know. I think you've been pretty lucky, considering everything. More so than your landlady back in New York.
Mrs. Grappler? What do you mean?
Betty Stark went to see her. Tried to find out where you were. When she wouldn't tell him, he broke her arm.
Oh, no. Oh, the poor woman.
Oh, it's a rough game, Miss O'Dare, trying to play it cozy with a mobster like Nick Shearn. You know, of course, that he sent Benny here to find you.
He'll have a hard time finding me in this place.
He did find you.
What?
Maybe he followed you from the house or saw you drive through town. Anyway, I ran into him back down the trailerways.
I thought I heard shooting a while ago.
You did. He tried to ambush me. He thought he had the drop, and he wouldn't give up. I had to kill him.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Nick Shearn matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the showdown. Victory, and then disaster. When a visitor to the little town of Bramberry turns out to be death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood.
Written by Les Whatfield.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar? Spell it.
J-O-H-N-N-Y-D-O-L-L-A-R.
That's not right. You forgot to capitalize.
Hey, you're right, honey. Let me hear you spell your name.
Okay. Capital J-O-H-N-N-Y-D-O-L-L-A-R. I-L-L, Jill, capital O, apostrophe...
Apostrophe.
I never can say that. Capital D-A-R-E, oh, dare. Of course, my last name's actually something else. I forget. But my mother says I'm really an O'Dare.
Not the least doubt about it. I can see it in a minute.
I like you, Johnny Dollar.
And I kind of like you, too, Jill O'Dare.
You think my mother's pretty?
I think she's lovely.
Then why don't you get married to her so I can have a daddy?
Well, that's, well, it's certainly something to think about. And not a bad idea. Now, be quiet before you wake her up.
I'm already awake, and with a plot like that being hatched, I think I'd better stay awake. Is there coffee, Johnny?
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location, a small cabin in the timber outside Branbury, Michigan, to the Home Office, Tri-Mutual Insurance Limited, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Nick Schirn matter. Expense account, final page. Item 15, $1 million, for a certain feeling. I realize, of course, that the amount of this item is somewhat unusual and may be cause for mild criticism by your accounting department, unless the accompanying report includes an adequate and detailed explanation. Therefore, to avoid unnecessary correspondence and delay, I am attaching said explanation herewith. Here's your coffee, Kathy.
Thanks. How long did I sleep, Johnny?
Oh, a couple of hours. It's around 4 a.m.
The storm hasn't let up at all, has it?
No, it's worse, if anything.
Jill, honey, it's 4 a.m. and your eyes are just about to fall out. Now you go back there and go to sleep.
Do I have to, Mommy?
You have to. Run along now.
Mr. Johnny Dollar and me were having a lot of fun till you woke up.
Well, that's life, sweetie. Night now.
Good night, Jill.
Night.
Proud of her?
I'm crazy about her. That's what you mean.
She's a great little girl.
She's the only thing I ever did in my whole life that turned out right.
That bad, huh?
Johnny, it's no good. I know why you're here. I know what you expect from me, and the answer's no.
You're jumping the gun. I haven't asked you anything.
You will. You haven't done all this for nothing. You're going to ask me to come back to New York and testify against Nick Schirn.
I might ask you to tell the truth. Is that just another way of wording it?
I didn't see anything, hear anything. I don't know anything about it, and I have nothing to say.
So Nick Schirn gets away with another murder.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
And sooner or later, of course, he'll kill you, too. He sent Benny Stark out to do it, and Benny missed. But he's got other boys, or he might even handle the job himself.
Why? By now he ought to know that I'm not going to tell.
But there's always that chance you might change your mind. And Nick's a gambler, but he likes the odds on his side. He doesn't take chances. Whenever he can, he stacks the deck.
I wish I could help you, Johnny. But I don't know anything about it. I left before it happened.
How long have you worked for Nick Schirn, known him?
2 years. I'm not wide-eyed about him, Johnny. I've heard what he's been, what he may even still be, a gangster, hoodlum, racketeer, but that's none of my business. The club was legitimate. My job there was on the level, and he never got out of line once.
And no doubt he's always been kind to his mother and loves dogs and children.
I wouldn't know, except children. He's crazy about them. He was always buying something for Jill, asking about her.
And he also shot and killed Mel Preker.
I couldn't say.
I see. Well, you're letting a lot of people down. People here in Branbury that you grew up with, people that love you, your father, Dan Martin.
What have they got to do with it?
You know, it's a great country up here. I'd like to spend more time in it. And it's big country, big and beautiful and dangerous. Like that blizzard outside there. It's not the kind of country that turns out cowards.
Cowards?
Your father said something yesterday. That some people belong in cities and some don't. And that you're one of the second kind. He was right. The city's made a coward of you.
You don't understand.
And they know it. Old Mike, Dan, all of them. Of course, they'll never mention it. But you're letting them down, and they know it. And you know it, Kathy.
They don't have a daughter to think of.
It's not her fear we're talking about. It's yours.
All right, I'm scared. I've got reason to be. It's easy for you to talk. You don't know what fear is, what it can do to you.
I don't.
It can push you and drive you and make you do things you hate yourself for.
And it can destroy you.
How would you know? How would any of them know? Who haven't felt it, who haven't been there.
Kathy, you're not alone. We've all been there. It's not the fear that's important. It's the courage you bring up to fight it.
I've tried. I've nearly gone crazy trying to think it out. But it always comes back to one thing. Jill. She's what counts. Nothing else matters.
And if you love her, teach her to grow up without fear. Sacrifice anything if you have to, even your life, but teach her courage. There's nothing greater you could do for her. It's all right, Kathy. It's all right. It's all right.
I knew what was right, Johnny. I knew all the time.
Sure, sure. Of course you did. All you needed was a little push. Want to tell me about it now?
I was there at the club that night. When it happened, I stayed after closing. I had some presents for Jill, and I wanted to wrap them before I took them home. Nick and Mel Pryker were upstairs in the office.
Nick was there?
Yes. I could hear them arguing. They didn't know I'd stayed, and then...
Go on.
I heard Mel yell out. He said, "No, Nick, no." And then I heard the shots.
Yes?
I didn't even think. I ran up to the office. Mel was lying on the floor, and Nick was standing there with a gun. He told me to get out and to keep quiet if I wanted to keep on living.
That's it, huh?
Yes.
Would you make a statement to the police, testify at the trial?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Will you help me, Johnny? Will you stand by me?
You know I will.
You've got to, because I'm scared. I'll be scared all the way, but I'll do it if you'll help me.
I'll help you, Kathy, all the way. Why don't you curl up here and get some sleep? Come on.
Maybe now I can sleep.
It's going to be all right.
Thanks, Johnny, for giving me the push.
Oh, sure, honey.
You know something, Johnny? I'm with Jill. I like you, too.
She went to sleep with her face against my chest. And after a while, little Jill came tiptoeing in and curled up on the other side. And I sat there holding them both, thinking and waiting for the dawn. So that's what I mean about a million-dollar feeling. True, it wasn't my little girl, or my big girl either. But for the moment at least, well, that item still goes. I'll still tag that feeling at $1 million. And I was sorry when the storm was over and a rescue party came up from town. Because I felt I'd had one moment in a lifetime that I'd never find again.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen when the snow lay round the fire.
The big event of the year in Branbury was the Christmas Eve show in the town hall. There was music and a pageant and singing, and everybody took part in it, from the youngest kid in town to the toughest old grizzled lumberjack from the back hills. Jill was in the children's chorus, and old Mike was to operate the spotlight, so they went on ahead. I took Kathy. And since she wasn't quite ready to face people yet, we made a point of getting there late. I didn't care when we got there, as long as I was with her. We slipped in quietly and took seats at the back of the room. The string group from the high school orchestra was playing, and no one noticed us. Not even old Mike, Kathy's father, who was working the spotlight.
I hope Jill does all right. She hasn't had any time to practice with
us. Oh, she'll do all right. We'd been there about 10 minutes when somebody else came in and slid into the one seat between us and the door. I didn't look around until I felt Kathy stiffen beside me.
Oh, no.
It was Nick Sherman.
Nobody gets excited now or makes any sudden moves. We just sit here quiet-like.
He slid his hand over to feel inside my coat under my arm.
Now back in the run, huh? Perfect.
I'd left my gun at Kathy's house. Old Mike had been dubious about it, but with Benny dead, I'd seen no reason to carry it. And after all, it was Christmas Eve.
All right, now we're going to ease out of here now without attracting no attention from anybody.
You're crazy, Nick. You're crazy.
Shut up. And just don't forget one thing, Dollar. I'm not holding this gun on you. It's aimed right at the middle of Kathy's back.
Let's go.
Johnny.
No choice, Kathy. Come on. The back of the room was dark. Nobody paid any attention. Somebody was always leaving or coming back in.
Come on. I got a car over at the side here.
Johnny.
Watch your dollar.
We'll be right back, Mike. Just gonna get some air.
All right, Johnny. But don't go running out before I give you your present.
Huh?
Here. And don't uncork that until you're ready for some serious business.
All right, I'll... Thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot.
Don't mention it. Good luck, Johnny.
Yeah, come on, let's get away from here.
Johnny, he's going...
Take it easy, Kathy.
Wait for me!
Oh, what?
Oh, no. Jill, go back!
Oh, I see Uncle Nick! Why'd you tell me you were coming here to hear me sing Uncle Nick?
Well, listen,
Jill. Pick me up, please, Uncle Nick. Take your hands out of your pocket and pick me up.
Look, Jill, you run along now. Who's that?
Dan Martin. He's a deputy sheriff, and he's a dead shot. Better do like she says, Nick. Take your hand out of your pocket and pick her up.
Uncle Nick?
All right, reach in my pocket, Johnny, and take my gun.
Later, Kathy and I walked around outside. We could still hear the children's chorus singing inside.
Jill saved our lives tonight.
No, she saved Nick's life.
What do you mean?
That present your father gave me, up there at the spotlights. He could see what was happening, and he thought real fast. That present was a gun.
Then you...
I had Nick covered from the time we stepped off the porch.
I'm glad he didn't move. I'm glad it happened like it did.
Yeah, so am I.
I thought we'd never see those stars up there again.
You kept hold of yourself, Kathy. You showed a lot of courage.
No. But maybe I can learn to show it. I was just thinking, Johnny, looking at the stars up there. There was fear in the world then. 2,000 years ago. And he had courage.
Expense account item 16, $230.40. Incidentals in Bramberry and transportation for 2 adults and 1 child. Bramberry to New York. Expense account total $486.20. End of account, end of report. Remarks? Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to all of you from all of us here on the program. And God bless you. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Peggy Weber, Don Diamond, Ben Wright, Jack Crucian, Barney Phillips, Sam Edwards, and Ken Christie. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Roy Rowan speaking.